many of us look up to as a teacher and a guide. Ajahn Brahmabhanso Mahathira was born in the UK and won a scholarship to study theoretical physics at Cambridge University. In his early adult years, he travelled to Thailand to train with the venerable Ajahn Chah. After practicing for 9 years as a monk, he was sent to Perth by Ajahn Chah in 1983 and was soon invited to teach in Australia and the rest of the world. But such recognition has not stopped him from dedicating his time to the sick, to those in prison, as well as his own sangha of monks in Bodhidharma Monastery in Perth, and of course, to Buddhist fellowship in Singapore. Ajahn is one of our spiritual patrons. Ajahn Brahm has also written many books, including Opening the Door of Your Heart, and, you know, any volunteers for the sequel to Opening of the Door of Your Heart? Good, bad, you know, thank you. Hundreds of Ajahn Brahm's Dhamma talks are downloaded countless times a year. Barely a day passes without someone, somewhere in the world, downloading or listening to a talk by Ajahn Brahm, such as the very fortunate community gathered here this evening. So friends, can we put our palms together and invite Ajahn Brahm on stage?
Signing books, photographs, and I suddenly realized I was drunk with her. That was the meaning of my life. That's my purpose, to have my photograph taken. But lonely was the purpose became my contentment and happiness. So, first little story. That to find out what the meaning of life is, this story is in the Open the Door of Your Heart book, because many of those stories I haven't told for years. And I told this story on a weekend retreat last Saturday, Sunday. It was actually the story of my life up until the time I was at university. Because when I was young, I loved playing soccer. I played soccer all the time. Going to the school team was doing really well. But we had the exams in England called the O-levels. And my parents and my teachers kept telling me, stop spending all the time playing soccer in the evenings. Do your homework. Do well at school, because if you pass your O-levels, then you'll be happy. So that became my goal. I wanted to pass my O-levels. And I thought, I believe everybody, once you pass your exams, then you're successful, you're happy. But then what happened next? As soon as you pass some exams, you have to take others. A-levels. And this time, quite honestly, I wasn't chasing a soccer ball, I was chasing girls. Spending too much time at parties, dances and stuff. And my parents and friends and teachers kept on saying again, don't chase the girls at night, stay at home. Do your homework. Study. Because if you pass your A-levels, then you'll really be happy. And I followed their advice. Again. And I passed my A-levels. So what happened next? University. And more exams. But at that point, again, all my relations, my friends kept on telling me, if you do well at university, especially a university like Cambridge, if you get a good degree, then you'll be made for life. You'll be happy whatever you do. You can do whatever you want with such a degree. That's what they told me. But for the first time, I stopped believing them. Why? Are you really happy once you pass your university exams? No! You have to go to work! And when people are going to work, they're working really hard, trying to save enough money to get a place to live or get a car. There's so many things you need to work hard for. And of course, I saw some of my elder friends. And then they were looking for some nice young man or nice young woman to share their life with. Looking for a partner in life. And they always said, when I find her, or him, when I find the one that's meant for me, then I'll be happy. I was told that today is Chinese Valentine's Day. So I'll tell you a Valentine's Day story. I told this at a wedding, just to give some good advice on Saturday. Good advice to this couple who are committing together. I said, actually, first of all, if you do commit together, I said, we have this in Singapore, because in a week's time, February the 29th, well, that is leap day. And in the West, that is the day that the girls can propose to the boys. Do you do that in Singapore too? You just propose any day. Shameless. But anyway, I told this, our first story, I love this story, because I told this couple, you know, I've known them for quite a time, they've been engaged for quite a few years, and I told them, from now on, now you're married, it's a totally different relationship than when you're just going out. Or even if you're engaged, once you exchange those wedding rings, that is totally different. I say this to make it clear to you, the difference between being engaged and being married is the same as the difference between bacon and eggs. So that's the difference between bacon and eggs. Think about it. In bacon and eggs, the chicken is only involved, the pig is committed. So I said before, it was a chicken relationship, but now you're married and you have to commit totally. And I also told them, because they were also Buddhists, and I told this to someone just today at lunch, why, as a Buddhist, once you're married, we always call it that beforehand you were a two-legged animal, he could go wherever he wants, she can go wherever she wants, you know, you're free. But once you're married, you're like one animal with four legs, like an elephant, you call it an elephant. And because of Buddhist culture, same as Chinese culture, you always must remember to keep the traditions. So the front legs of the elephant have to be the man. The back legs have to be the woman. That's tradition culture. We all know in Singapore, the elephant walks backwards. It's true, isn't it? But anyway, so they were looking for someone to share their life with. And then when they found somebody, they got married, then what happens? Aren't they happy? No, because they've got to work really hard. When there's two of you, they get a real house. There's a bachelor you can live anywhere, but when you're married, you've really got to clean up your acts. And so all these people I knew who were married, they were still working hard. They weren't happy yet. Because what they wanted was actually to get financially stable. But then they started wanting kids. And once they had kids, ooh, that was big trouble. Oh, so you don't need kids, you get a dog, get a cat. The dog never talks back to you. It doesn't cost any money at all. And they're always, always happy to see you. But anyway, if you really want a kid, have a kid. But it's a lot of hard work bringing up a child. And I know a lot of people, even now, what they want is their children to grow up, to actually to get a nice degree, a job, a nice partner, to get settled. And we always think that once the kids are settled, then I can be happy. What's happiness somewhere in the future? When I pass my O-levels, I'll be happy. Then A-levels, be happy. When I pass my degree, then I'll be happy. When I find a partner, then I'll be happy. When I get enough money for the partner, then I'll be happy. When I find a partner to live with, then I'll be happy. When I get kids, then I'll be happy. Have you ever noticed kids? Those of you who have children, you understand this, that when they're born, you can't wait till they speak. And the first words, they're so cute. You can't wait till they speak. But as soon as they speak, you can't wait for them to shut up. Well, anyway, back to when the kids grow up, then I'll be happy. When they do grow up, what happens then? That time gives you so close to retirement. So people think that when I retire, then I'll be happy. Have you ever noticed that you go to churches and most Buddhist temples, what's the demographic which comes to most temples and churches? Old people. You know why old people aren't going to temples and churches? Because they think when they die, they're not be happy. You never notice, we want something always in the future. We never have any happiness. We always put it off until another day. So sometimes, when you realize what you do in your life, how do you get what you want? Number one, don't go looking too far into the future. When you look too far into the future, what you want, you don't realize what you have right now is amazing and wonderful. In other words, when you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. Think about that. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. So all you guys,
especially Singapore men, look at your wife. She's more than good enough. For goodness sake, don't go looking for a mistress. Guys are really strange. But this happens. People come to me and they complain, they bother me. My husband's got a mistress. And I keep sort of telling them, look, the husband comes and says, yeah, I have a mistress, but she doesn't know. She's not going to find out. Do you remember two or three years ago, there was a fellow in the United States called General Petraeus. He was the head of the CIA with the resources of the most secretive spy agency in the world. And even the head of the CIA could not keep his affair a secret from his wife. So if he can't do it, guys, you've got no chance. She's going to find out. But anyway, why do you want that? So getting what you want is find out what you really want, first of all, and get that. Now, some of these stories, I do so many talks, I don't know which ones you've heard, which ones you haven't heard. Anyway, people listen to every talk is on video and recorded and so. But please excuse me, because even the Buddha repeated his talks. And sometimes people ask, why do you keep telling the same stories? And the answer is because you haven't understood them yet. So this is one of the most moving, nice stories. It was the story of this monk, the abbot of a temple, somewhere a long time ago. And he was woken up early in the morning, about 3 o'clock. Someone was in the meditation room, and the main shrine room, the hall. He thought, first of all, it was one of his monks. Then he thought, no, not my monks. So he'd gone up out of bed to investigate. And what did he see there? A burglar. It was a burglar trying to open the donation box. We had a burglar in our monastery in Perth recently. And he stole chainsaws, generators, and other stuff. He stole from our monastery. Thank you, burglar, so much. Because as a result of him taking his old chainsaws and generators, we claimed got insurance and we could get new ones. Not better than the ones he stole. So if anyone finds that burglar, I'm going to thank him side by side. Because without you, he's going to be using his old machines. So sometimes burglars can be very, very kind. But anyway, this burglar was trying to get into the donation box of the temple with a big knife. And as soon as the burglar saw the monk coming, get out of here! I'm not anything! And I always say, if you're giving a public talk, make it dramatic. At the very least, it stops people falling asleep. And the monk calmly says, what are you doing? None of your business! I enjoy telling this story because I'm a monk, a very senior monk, very popular. I'm not allowed to shout and raise my voice. I have this wonderful freedom to do what I'm not really supposed to do. And the monk sort of could see what he was doing. So the monk reached into his pocket. What are you doing? Take your hand out of your pockets. So he took the hand out of his pockets. It was a key. Here's a key to the donation box, said the monk. These donations are made out of compassion to help people. You obviously need it more than I'm thankful. So here's a key. Thank you.
Is this some kind of trick?
So he took the keys and he pointed the knife at the monk while he opened the donation box. and emptied out all of the compounds. It was Chinese New Year, it was Christmas. And the monk said to him, when was the last time you ate?
None of your business!
But he kept putting money into his pockets. And the monk said, sir, above the donation box, in the cupboard, there is some food left over from today's lunch. Help yourself. And so, having filled his pockets with the money, then he filled them even further with the food. And as he was about to go, he pointed the knife at the monk again and said,
don't call the police! I'll come back and kill you!
And the monk said very gently, why should I call the police? I've given you this money. I've given you the food. It's my opportunity to make good karma, to be kind. Go in peace, enjoy the food, and whatever you need the money for, it's yours. So the man ran away. And the following morning, when this monk told the committee were actually very proud of him. Isn't that what he'd like your monks to be? You're generous, why can't us be generous? You're kind, why can't we be kind? And so he was teaching by example, so they all said, so, what a wonderful example you are to us. The next day, or a couple of days later, the monk was reading the newspaper, and he saw that man had been captured by the police, robbing another house, and was sentenced to 10 years in jail. Now, 10 years and one day later, that abbot, a little bit older, was woken up in the early morning. Someone was in the shrine room, the main hall. He got up, he went into that hall, and who did he see? The old worker with a knife and the donation box.
Do you remember me?
Said the broker. Yes, said the abbot, here's the keys. And then the burglar put the knife down and smiled and spoke softly. He said, I've been thinking about you every day myself for the last 10 years. In my whole life, you were the only one who was kind to me. He was talking about my welfare. You noticed I was hungry. You pointed out where the food was. You knew that I was desperately in need of money. You just let me take the money without calling the police. And he said, I've come back here to steal from you again. But not the money or the food. I realized last time I stole the wrong things. Now I want to steal from you, Mark, the secret of generosity and compassion. Please name me Mark. Because that's what he always wanted. The money was just a means to an end. The food was just to do whatever you need to do in life. What he really wanted in life, what he never had, like many people who go to jail, never had anyone to really love him, respect him, be kind to him. And that's what I really want. And it's the secret of that I've come to steal this time. It's what a person really wants. When you understand that story, you understand, once you understand, once you realize what you really want in life, and all the other things are put in priority. Yeah, it's great to have money, but not at the expense of your health, not at the expense of your family, and certainly not at the expense of your happiness. That's what a lot of these things for. Now I realize that at such an early age because, again, at university, I always started to, I had the time to actually ask myself, what do I really want in life? But before I could actually get what I wanted, I had to find out what it was. probably you can talk to my friends. There is money is important. There's something much, much, much more important than money. What I really want to do in my life, because it's to have this wonderful thing called happiness. What exactly is that happiness? And how can I get that happiness? That was the first thing. And the other thing, which is even more important, was actually to be able to give happiness to others. And that reminded me of this little story, which is not in one of the books. I tried to include it, but the editor said it was in some other book a long, long, long time ago. And maybe, with some copyright issues. But I had enough stories, so I didn't really mind about this. There was a story of a tree. A tree in a forest a long time ago. And a boy used to play in that tree. There were some trees which are good climbing trees for boys. Where they've got nice branches low down, and you can climb in there and play in their branches, and it's very safe. And so this boy, when he was growing up, would spend hours climbing in his favourite tree. Climbing up, even though he sometimes trod on the tree or two and broke the tree, injured the tree. Still the tree enjoyed having this little boy climb all over him. Maybe put his hand out him, but he loved that little boy. As much as the boy loved that tree. Some years later, the boy stopped coming. He had to go to school and do his own levels and A-levels. But he came back one day as a young man. And he talked to his tree, and the tree said, "Oh, it's wonderful to see you again. Can you climb up me?" He said, "No, I'm a bit old to climb now. But I've got a big problem. And I managed to get good results at school. I got a place at university. But my family is poor, we can't afford to send me there. What should I do?" And the tree said, "I created lots and lots of fruit, lots of apples. This year," he said, the tree, "I'm going to make so many apples. I'm going to put really extra effort in. So many apples. And I want you to come at a certain time and pick all those apples, take them to the market and sell them to help pay for your university. I'll work really hard for you." And the tree did that. It was a bumper crop that year. And the kid threw sticks up on the tree, broke off twigs and branches to get all those apples. The tree didn't mind. He was happy that his friend was being helped. And he managed to get enough apples to help pay for his first year. The second year, he had to go back again and ask for more apples. And the tree put so much effort in. A huge number of apples to pay university fees. And the same the third year. The poor tree that put so much effort into making the apples almost killed himself. But it was enough to get the kid through university. And then the kid never came back for a while. And when he did come back again, he came back with a smile and said, "Tree, I finished my university, I've got a job now. And I found this beautiful woman. We're in love. We're going to get married. But I can't afford a house." And the tree looked at the boy and said, "Look at all those big branches which I have. Take them, cut them down, and get some wood so that you can find a nice house." So the kid came the next day, and he took every branch off that tree, just left the stump, the big trunk. Almost killed the tree, had no more branches, trees, or leaves anymore. But the tree was so happy, could help his best friend, this little kid, now a young man, about to get married. And there was enough timber there to make a house, just to get them started in life. And the kid never came back for years. And the tree was still there, was hardly alive, but it was existing. But when the boy came back, there was an old man. Not an old man, middle-aged man. The tree was again so happy to see his friend. "How have you been? What's been happening to you?" And he told how he got married, had kids, had a good career, and now he was retired. And his wife was asking him, in our retirement, let's get a boat and go and sail and explore the world. And I need some wood to make a boat. And the tree said, look at this, your arm trunk. It's got so much solid timber in there. Take the trunk. You sure? Said the man. Yes. So the man cut the tree down at the roots and took the timber away to make a boat so he could enjoy his retirement with his wonderful wife. And the tree never saw him for a long time. The tree was almost dead now, just roots. But one day, this very old man came back. It was his boy, the young man he got to university. The man who he gave the timber for the house and the boat. And the tree now just said, oh, it's wonderful to see. Did you enjoy your dinner? He said, oh, yes, wonderful. I'm very old now. And time for dying. I'm just thanking you for all you've given me. And the tree said, I'll just give you one more thing. What can you do, said the man, if you give me everything from yourself? All you've got left is your roots. Yes, said the tree. Lay your tired head on my roots. Let me cradle you as you go to sleep. Don't make me so happy, said the tree. So the old man put his head down in horror of the old roots of his favorite tree and fell asleep. In that story, the tree, what does it stand for? It stands for your father, your dad. You cry all over your father when you're a kid. Cry all over him, pull his ears and hair. And does he ever complain? He loves it. Your child is playing with you. Later on, when he goes to university, you work harder than ever to pay the fees, take extra jobs, sometimes almost kill yourself with stress, trying to get your kids the best education. And then, when your child gets married, what do? We've got something called the bank of mum and dad. If you go to other banks in Singapore, you have to pay interest. You have to fill out so many forms. But if you get married, the bank of mum and dad will never charge interest. And in fact, a lot of times they don't expect the money back. But they're so happy to give what they have. But the tree gave the branches to the sun. And even later on, if your kid wants to get anything else in life, you'll sacrifice anything, right? The tree gave his trunk to make a boat. At the very end, their old grandpa, grandma, in their old age, they can't give very much more. All they can say to their son, lay your head here on my lap. That will make me so happy. That is the sacrifice of parents to their children. And do the parents ever feel bad about that? The parents love doing that. That is what they want to do. Our purpose of our life is not to get, but to give. Whatever we do get is for the purpose of giving. Whatever wisdom we get is for the purpose of sharing. Whatever happiness we have, it's for the purpose of celebrating with others. Our job, our purpose in life, what we really want is to share and give and love. And for me, I know this because this gives me so much happiness. When I see any of you, and some of you come, you know, you're getting divorced, you get in big trouble. The last talk I gave 2 or 3 days ago, I did mention one of the first times I went to Bangkok. It was an invitation from the Australian Embassy in Bangkok. Why? Because 4 of the couples who worked in that embassy were about to get divorced. Remember I said that 3 days ago? Not divorced, you call it recycled. lui è ancora il divorzio, in questa piccola risata.
Two have already separated, two will just go through the process of the divorce. But because of those teachings, those four couples came together again.
There was a two bad big story. I told that 3 days ago, I'm not referring now. There was still that the reasons they were going to step away was just so small compared to all the wonderful times and happiness they shared together. Yeah, they made a few mistakes, but why break up a relationship because of a couple of mistakes? Why don't we see all the wonderful other happy times we've had together? With our children, with our parents, with our friends, especially with our lovers. We commit together like bacon, not like eggs. And so we work together. Not perfect, but we can let that go because we see there's plenty of other good bits in the world. And I brought those four couples together. And they said, you know, we know your stories, but we want you to come to Bangkok to show our thanks. Our thanks for bringing us together again, keeping our family together. And I said, so telling me that, that's all the thanks I want. But they wanted to celebrate that by bringing me to Bangkok. And I was actually saying, that's my job. When I hear stories like that, that really, really blows my heart. And that's my meaningful life. That's what I want. And how do I get what I want? By coming to the Buddhist Fellowship, the Taipei Center, and giving a talk. This is how I get what I want. To be able to sort of help and serve and give. Like a tree. And it's true. But I let you walk all over me. Putting food on my plate at lunch, I was so full today. But just as being a happy smile when you're feeding me, that's more than I needed. That was a good idea for us today. Your happiness. The other thing was secondary. And that is actually the meaning of life. The happiness which you give to other people. And once you give the happiness to other people, that's what you get back afterwards. It's incredible just how much joy you get by serving looking after others. That little story of the monk and the robber. How much happiness does the monk get? Can you get hearing stories like that? That is really the meaning of life. There was this story which was in the newspapers in Australia. There was a kid, maybe 9 years of age, 8 years of age, coming back from school one afternoon. And he had his birthday was recently, and he had a new BMX bike. This was about 10 years ago. And as he was cycling home from school, he saw two elder kids, maybe 12 or 13, they had caught a rabbit. And they were mistreating the rabbit, torturing the rabbit. And even though these two kids were much older and bigger than this 9-year-old boy, he stopped his bike and told the kids, leave the rabbit alone, leave the rabbit alone, stop hurting it. And these two boys said, get out of here. And he couldn't find his boys. They were much bigger than him. So he said to them, I'll swap you my new bike for that rabbit. That was a new BMX bike. This was a little old rabbit. And those two kids, yeah, sure. And so he arrived back home. When his mum said, where's your bike? He was holding a rabbit instead. And he told the story. His mum and dad were so proud of him. And he sacrificed what he really wanted, not for his birthday. He sacrificed that to help this poor little creature, a rabbit. It's a really kind boy. What happened next was his father knew someone in the local newspaper, rang him up, and it was front page article in the newspaper the next day. The good news, instead of the wars or the corruption or the American election, all this other thing of unusual, there's a story of this little boy who had actually given away his expensive bike, which he really loved, to save a little rabbit. And what a wonderful story that was. But the next day, he was also in the front page of the newspaper. next to three BMX bikes. Local people, especially people who own bicycle stores, were so impressed with this gift, they just sent a new BMX bike back to him. He'd only lost one, he got three, and so great. So kindness is a good investment. But those are the thoughts of the story. That's what I want. And that's how I like to get what I want. To try and inspire by sending real examples of what happiness truly is. And I ask you, what's the happiest thing you've done today? Was it to make money in the stock market? Was it to close a deal with somebody? Was it to get what you wanted from your partner? Was it arguing with your kids? What is the happiest moment today or last week? Now, is that what you really want? I know what your happiest moment was. But there's scary, there's a blanket there today, but that's really cute. So when we share a card to another, that's what we really, really want. And that becomes the meaning of our life. When we share and give, we have this beautiful fun and love together. Now, to be able to do that, sometimes people say, but, if you are kind, people walk all over you. They'll exploit you. They'll use you as a doormat. Exactly. That's your purpose in life. To be exploited by others. You do that to me, and do I look stressed out? Do I look like I'm suffering? No, so I keep telling you, exploit me some more. Because sometimes when we just think of ourselves, we miss the point. That's why that marriage last Saturday. It's amazing that a lot of times people ask monks or sometimes Catholic priests to bless their marriage. Have you ever noticed that monks have never been married? Catholic priests are celibate. What do they know about marriage? And the answer is a lot. Just because I'm not in that field, it does not mean I don't know what I'm talking about. I think I mentioned a few days ago to the voting article that in September last year, I had this wonderful invitation to Korea to give a keynote address at a major world conference. And they came business class tickets. No argument, business class all the way to Seoul and to Beijing, where the conference was being held. Called me up in the most swanky of hotels. And they also were so impressed with my half hour, that's all, 30 minute talk, they gave a $2,000 donation to my monastery. That's really, really good rates. But that money for this fellowship, this is for free. Now, the most interesting part of that was the name of the conference. Because when I told people, they couldn't believe this. I gave the keynote address, the opening address, and to start the whole conference, to set the theme for the 2015 World Computer Congress. So I'm an expert, I'm internationally well respected. Maybe. So if you talk about computers, you can talk about anything, like marriage. And it's wonderful, if you want to know how to get what you want with your partner, with your kids, with your boss, or with your workers, this little story which I told was so powerful. What it's doing is just making you see the problem and find a solution from a different perspective. And again, this couple, I married on Saturday, they just got so confused. They didn't understand what I was getting at until I gave them the answer. And then had light bulbs.
Yeah, now they understood how to be happy together. And that was the story of looking at a groom, first of all, telling him, today he's a married man, today and from now on, he must not think of himself. You're married, you can't think of yourself anymore. So he nodded. Then I looked at his wife and said the same. You are now a married woman, you must not think of yourself either. And she said, yeah, sure, of course. And still looking at her, I said, and from this day on, as a married woman, you must not think of him, your husband. That's when she looked around. But who is this guy doing our marriage? And the wife turned to him and said to him the same thing. From this day on, you must not think of your wife. And I let them be confused for a few seconds. They must not think of themselves, they must not think of their partner. Because the solution for happiness, the one we really want in life, the solution is from now on you must only think of us. Us. You mustn't think of yourself. You must not think of your partner. You must only think of us. We're in it together. Just like the Buddhist Fellowship, Executive Committee. Never think of yourself. Never think of the person sitting next to you, or the president, or the secretary, or whatever. You must only think of us. In it together. In a company, don't think of me, or the boss, or the worker. We're a team. It's us. We're together. Imagine if in Manchester United, or Liverpool, or Arsenal, or the Premier League, they only thought of themselves. And so when they're just about to score a goal, they tackle each other. My turn to score a goal. No, you're my turn. You can't just think of yourself. You have to think of us. And I've extended that to so many different angles of life. Life is not about you. Life is about others. It's only about us. We're in this world together. And so if we change that perception, it's amazing just how we can find what we really want in life. Respect, love, kindness. And maybe one of the last words I'm going to talk here is, I know that just as we're coming here, the driver was saying just now how many Christian churches are in Singapore, maybe non-industrial sites to make Christian churches, so there may be Christians. But this little question and the answer shows, you know, how we can find what else we want in life, which is harmony. How can we have harmony between people of different religions? It's a big problem with religious extremism in our world. But how do we stop that? The extremism, the bombing and the killing, and the lack of trust between people. And I think this answer to this question, which I was once asked, helped by the answer. Because I was at a big conference once, another conference, and I was presenting together with a Catholic abbot, who I'd known for many years, had some great discussions. It's wonderful to meet people different than you. That's one of the reasons I was at the computer conference, because when it's somebody different, you get a different angle of what's going on, and it increases your knowledge. If you just listen to the same old people, you just hear what you already know. So that's why I love hanging out with other people. Muslims, Christians, atheists, you name it, I'll hang out with them. And so, well, up to a point. Even like criminals. We learn so much from criminals. You know, just terrible stuff happens to them. Just done one bad thing in the court of bankruptcy. And that's another talk altogether. But on this particular conference, a member of the audience who was a well-known professor in Australia, he was the man who the Australian government asked to lead a commission to try and put a Charter of Human Rights into the Australian Constitution. So this was a very, very highly respected intellectual person. So when he asked me a question, it was not a time for a joke.
I had to be serious. And his question was a very big question. He said, you're a Buddhist monk. How do Buddhists think about God? Is a Christian God, a Muslim God, a Jewish God? What's a Buddhist idea of a God? And I was very happy with my answer, just off the cuff as usual. It's much better not to prepare anything, because if you prepare something, the answer is cold and formal. If you answer on the spot, you can go very, very deep and discover new things for yourself. So this is the way I answered the question. What does a Buddhist think about the idea of a God? And I said, this is my friend sitting next to me, abbot of a Benedictine monastery. And we've had all these discussions over the years. In fact, he died a couple of years ago. And I went to his funeral mass. Not the only non-Christian, but another non-Catholic. I was the only non-Christian who went to this service. And the people realized we were so close together, they invited me to give a speech at his funeral. I was so honored to give the funeral speech, or one of the speeches, at the funeral mass of a Catholic. Thank you for doing that for me. And I said, my friend, Abbot Placid, his name has always been telling me for years that one of his fundamental beliefs, which has driven his life, was everybody is searching for God. Now, don't react to that. They say, now we don't need more God, we've had enough of that, Buddhists wouldn't believe in God, caused too many problems in this world. Now don't react. I said, I'm going to respect his view. He's a friend. One of the amazing things in life, even if you don't agree with what other people say, please respect him. You don't agree with what your wife says, most of the time. No, all the time, maybe. Well, please respect it. Instead of going back to your husband's thing. So I respected this from my best friend, even though no, I don't believe in God as a Buddhist. Not a usual God. But when he asked that, he said that that's one of his core beliefs. Then I said, if my friend says everyone is searching for God, everyone, then what do Buddhists search for? What do you search for? What do you want in your life? The real important things in life. You want respect. Whether you're gay or lesbian, you want respect. Whether you're a criminal, you made a mistake, you want respect. As a wife, you want respect from your partner. As a husband, respect for how much you're working for the family. As a kid, respect for your parents. You're trying your best. Maybe naughty sometimes, but that's what kids are like. You want respect from your boss, how hard you're working. And you also want respect for all the burdens of management he has to take on. You want respect. And you also just want to be loved. This is a beautiful thing to be loved by somebody else, to be in somebody's presence. And you don't have to live up to anything, you don't have to meet other expectations. This is a friend, they know you so well, they love you for who you are. What a beautiful thing that is, to have the wonderful warmth of the love of another person. And also the ability to love others, the ability to care. And quite frankly, that's the gift you've given me. The opportunity to love you all and care for you. And a long time, some of you. That's why I tried to leave the Buddhist fellowship, but I just can't do it. Can't do it. you would just stay still for a few moments and just enjoy this moment. We travel so hard in our life trying to get to our destinations and our goals. We have to remember to pause every now and again. Just to sit down on the benches of our journey, in between our journey, and to rest, and to enjoy how far we've already come. Each one of you achieved so much in your life. It's been a struggle, many difficulties you've overcome. And look how far you've got. Before you go on to the next leg of your journey, sit down, find some peace, be still, and make you so content and happy you've done really, really, really well. So you want some peace in our life? We want the truth. We want to find out what this life is all about. And that's why you come listen to monks like me. I don't tell you what the truth is. I just reaffirm what you already know is the truth. To take away all the businesses with the bullshit. And try to go right to the heart of stuff. So you can actually see what the truth is. That's what we want. Truth, respect, peace, love, respect. So I said, if that's what Buddhists are searching for, and if my friend says everyone is searching for God, he's a Catholic abbot, he's supposed to be an expert. So that must be what God is. What each one of you is searching for. Not a person, but respect. To love and be loved. Peace. Kindness, truth. This beautiful happiness which comes with it. He said that's what God is. Now straight away, that takes all this religion right to the essence of things. And even atheists, free thinkers, make a lot of you, you don't make sense. So isn't that what you want in life? Just like that robber who wanted the money first of all, that's not what he really wanted. That's why he went into trouble. He wanted respect and love and kindness. Someone to, an abbot is to understand him and be kind to him. What a great gift that is to have the kindness and the love of another human being. That's what you're searching for. And that's to be able to give that same to another person. That's what you want. And as soon as you realize what you really want, then you have it. How to get what you want is to realize what you truly want. Once it happens, the end of the goal is there for you. What do you really want? If you look outside, you never find anything. Look inside, in this moment, you already have it. That's my job. I sometimes feel a pause. I'm telling you, as one person said, it's like selling water by the river. You've got the water, so please drink it. But thank you all for listening. Sorry, sorry, sorry. Excellent. So now we have the opportunity for Q&A.
Yes, so at the very top we will actually open the floor to questions.
Yeah.
But we also cognizant that, you know, we have about 1,000 people here, so we have adopted the electronic platform, and some questions have been coming over the course of the talk, and as well. I would like to acknowledge that Brother Chai has been helping me to answer the question.